and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 661.
That's right. Tonight we are talking about two big pieces of GL. Well, big is relative term. But topic-wise, looking big, at the episode-wise.
Two big pieces of something.
Yeah.
Varying somethings.
So we're just going to dive right into it. First up, we've got Green Lantern issue number 38, which is titled Food Fight Part 1. Ooh, Part 1!
I know, that was
so kind of exciting.
That was kind of depressing just by itself, that they're openly telling you that there's a Part 2.
Our writer is Jeremy Adams. Our artists, there are Zermonico and Seisman Kudaski. Colorist Romulo Fajardo Jr., and I should probably just expand this. I can't even read some of this because it's just,
Matt Herms.
Well, it's too zoomed out or zoomed in on mine, so it's distorting. Matt Herms, letterer Dave Sharp, cover artist Zermanico, and then obviously we have our variant covers, and we have assistant editor Jillian Grant, editor Kathleen Wesneski, and group editor Paul Kaminsky. I will make a quick note. I believe this is Zermanico's last issue from what I've been reading online. So
well,
there is that.
And considering I don't think the art's particularly good in this issue, that maybe that's not a bad thing. But the devil you know is sometimes or often better than the devil you don't. So
we pick up where we left off on that rooftop with Major Force coming down on our heroes, Odyssey and Jade and GL, Kyle. He punches Major Force with a Construct's fist with knuckle dusters with the spikes on them. And they're about to go into fighting each other pretty hard when eventually Jade intervenes and says, basically, hey, he's on our side. They have amnesty after the tournament of the DCKO thing that happened, and Kyle's just not hearing that, and the league is giving people amnesty and is pissing him off, and she brings him up to speed on him working with Shade and all of that stuff. Basically, he lets him go, turns him loose to handle this troll guy that they took care of last issue. And then elsewhere in LA, God, I don't even care. I don't care to figure out if this is Big Belly Burger or their competition or whatever. The competition, I assume, for Big Belly Burger has recruited Condiment King to take on Big Belly Burger for whatever the fuck's going on there. Big Belly Burger is opening a new location on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in L.A., and their mascots are there, the four that we saw previously. And then Condiment King shows up with a booming onion to disrupt everything. Meanwhile, over on a rooftop, Odyssey and Kyle are commiserating and talking about potentially, we could leave the planet if you wanted. And she's like, hey, that's what I do when things, and he says, get complicated. And then Kyle gets an alert about what's going on in LA and heads off to the fight, where we see Condiment King going up against these Big Belly Burger mascots and throws like rocket red ketchup at them and so on and so forth. The mascots are getting the better of Condiment King. So the Big Belly Burger executives is like, who sent you? And he's like, I'd rather eat my food plain. And then he tries to sick one of the bear mascot on Condiment King. And then a pizza tray comes flying out of the air, a la Captain America, S.H.I.E.L.D. style, and a group of individuals known as Feast show up to take them on. I'm assuming this is part of the group that are going up against Big Belly Burger and are the benefactors of Condiment King. Meanwhile, Odyssey and GL are just watching all these people face off against each other and doing nothing about it, just staring in shock. Meanwhile, out in space, we catch up with Hal and company. They're being chased by a space shark. Hal turns the piloting over to Toby. He says, I want you to steer basically into the blue energy outside of the ship. And he sticks his ring out and recharges, cops a recharge off of that, and uses a construct of a space dolphin. I actually do like that. To take out the space shark and get it off their tail. And he's like, hey, keep heading along the path of this emotional stream. It's been a while since I've been recharged. And that's it. Nothing happened. Nothing of consequence. I don't care for the artwork, particularly in the Condiment King section of stuff, but the rest of the stuff, which I believe is Zermanico stuff, is okay. I particularly like, obviously, when we flash back to Hal. I liked all of that.
Yeah,
that
that's cool. That's better. That's the better artwork in the book.
That's Zermanico.
Then that's a plus.
Him copping a charge off the blue energy. Okay. It could have something to do with all the mess that we've been seeing in Core with this Chrome Lantern and this emotional wellspring and just like all that stuff. But I thought the idea with blue was that a blue lantern, specifically a blue lantern, not just the blue energy. You had to be in the presence of a blue lantern, and they essentially, like, forgive my use of the word, but they essentially will the Green Lanterns in their vicinity to cop a charge off of them in terms of, like, just it amplifies their power. But if Hal's ring is dead, and there is no actual blue lantern to direct that energy, how is he recharging off the blue energy?
Well, what doesn't make any sense is that why doesn't he steal for the green energy? Because yeah, there is some green energy there. But I'm okay with the blue energy conceptually, but then his ring should be charged to like 150-200%.
Yeah.
If you're going to bend the rules a little bit, then at least you got to stick with the part of the lore, which is that, but you're right, it's tied to Blue Lantern rings more than anything, which is why Kyle, during the War of the Green Lanterns, was kind of not exactly a plus half the time, because whenever he was around Green Lanterns, he was amplifying their power because it's defaulted to do so. It's like you have to learn like how not to do it, and Kyle couldn't do it, so the default always made the Green Lantern stronger when he was squaring off with them. But yeah, it should be where if he's going to cop a charge off the blue and it's going to work, then he should be like, and who knows, maybe they'll give us this tidbit for the two pages Hallaby in the issue next month, that maybe you'll find out that, yeah, his ring is at 200%. But that would have been a nice little, if you're going to go down this road, that would have been a nice way to do it. But yeah, this issue was a steaming pile. Arguably, the only thing interesting in this issue was the stuff with, which I guess now that we know the Major Force is going to be back next issue, there's a chance we might delve into this more. But to me, the only thing that's interesting about this at all was the concept that when Kyle on the rooftop with Odyssey, of just about, as he's trying to dwell, you know, essentially he's dwelling on the fact that, you know, they're supposed to be the good guys. And how good are the good guys if you're dealing with somebody who's a complete piece of crap like Major Force, and you're giving him carte blanche to do what he did, is doing now, regardless of what he did before. That is an interesting concept about the moral ambiguity you have to deal with sometimes, and where's that line that you have to draw. So it's similar to how the Dark Star arc could have been inherently 1,000 times more interesting if Venditti didn't steer it into the ditch immediately, going from let's kill everybody who deserves to be killed in issue one, and then by issue two it's jaywalking detected, lethal force enabled, and go off the deep end. But it's like that it's an interesting concept. Let's see if we even really seriously delve into it again, or we're just going to have some kind of moment of understanding between Kyle and Major Force, which wouldn't make a lot of sense either. But other than that,
none of it makes sense, because you know what this whole granting amnesty and like, you know, kind of keeping these villains in their orbit to keep an eye on them just because they helped us out with this thing. You know what it reminds me of? It's the exact same thing that happened after Forever Evil, when Lex and them joined the League for a while and all that stuff, because the villains came together and protected the planet when the heroes couldn't, like, you know, all of that shit. So we put them into the team, and we're like, we've been here before. Why are we doing this again?
Yeah, and again, conceptually, moving beyond the whole amnesty concept, is the fact that there's a difference between, hey, when you're facing Necron, you know, Sinestro's not such a big deal. And when you're facing the First Lantern, you know, Necron's not such a bad deal. There's a difference when you know that there's something worse over the horizon and you see it. So dealing with somebody who was a problem before, it's like, okay, you got to hold your nose and do it. There's a difference between that, just like the enemy of my enemy is my friend in extreme circumstances, and then something like this, because come on, I mean, Major Force is like the only one who's capable of dealing with this crap. And again, I couldn't help but think of Jade's role in this, because Jade obviously knew this to begin with, that he was working there. So maybe even if Jade didn't 100% know that this was going to be the guy that was going to show up to deal with this problem, don't you think she should have told Kyle about this? Which, at least on the bright side, Kyle seems to react like, yeah, you should have told me too, which is why he kind of blows her off. It's probably not going to last long, because it's Kyle, and he thinks with his, you know what. But the reality is, I couldn't help but think that, well, you know, Jade didn't exactly do right by Kyle in any of this. But nonetheless, it was crap. This was crap. I mean, the one thing we give credit where credit's due is we can usually tell over the last like 4 or 5 months, we can usually tell whether the Green Lantern issue is going to be crap, whether it's going to be potentially entertaining, or whether it might be in between. Because just by the solicits, that the solicits usually tell you whether it's going to be crap. And we knew this issue, in all honesty, was going to be crap based on the way the last issue ended, along with the solicits. That's whole Condiment King and the belly, big belly burger mascots again. We knew this was. I don't know what the hell Jeremy's thinking. I don't know why he would think, or anybody would think, this is really entertaining. I mean, some people, I guess, could think it's mindless fun. But we don't need issue after issue of quote-unquote mindless fun that's not too much fun, when we have a much more interesting potential story going on with Hal. But for some strange reason, he's relegated to the back burner of this book, which of course makes no sense based on the TV show, even though I guess on one level you can make a case. And it kind of is echoing what's we will end up on the TV show. But I don't know. I just think it's crap. And this is whatever momentum we might have had slightly over the last 2 months, this just kind of torpedoes it.
Yeah, 100%. I don't have much else to say. Not constructive anyways. Like, don't get me wrong, I sort of see what they're going for here. It's a very Silver Age-y type issue, especially with the Big Belly Burger and stuff. And I've said it 1,000 times, I love when we rope in other DCU stuff, including and not limited to Condiment King and concepts like Big Belly Burger. Like, I like that stuff. I do. But this thing has just been slowly slipping. The series has just been slowly slipping down. This is not the right time for bullshit, especially when we haven't seen anything that's been going on with Hal at all. And we're just added to that. And this might serve as a good segue into our next topic. Added to that, this is the first main issue of GL that's come out since Lanterns. And if anybody got curious about Green Lantern off of watching Lanterns and walked into their LCS to pick up the most recent issue of GL, this would be it.
Yeah, you're not wrong. First of all, because you're kind of like paving the way for all things Jon Stewart. You know, the natural reaction would be, where's Jon Stewart? And then it's like, well, at least we can read about Hal. It's like, where's Hal? Who's this Kyle guy? And more importantly, who the hell are these why are we fighting burger mascots? I don't understand at all. Why. I mean, I know if you look at the solicits, the stuff that's supposed to be coming after the next issue, or at least it certainly on paper sounds much more interesting than this. But that does not explain at all why we went off, you know, why we've chosen to drive this book storyline, story-wise, into a ditch pretty much since the 600th issue, which was, what was that, 33? I think 33 was the, I think. almost issue 600. But either way, this has been a steaming pile on various degrees. Obviously, the last 2 months were a little less steaming, and this goes back to the like the worst issue dealing with Dr. Skin and stuff like that. This is bad. It's not even enjoyable to read at all.
Yep. And it looks like we won't even start getting answers about what's going on with Hal until around issue 41, which is the issues that were solicited today. Green Lantern 41 solicit came out, and it's, you know, one of the big taglines on it is "The Mysterious Voice Revealed." First of all, we don't even know what voice, but I assume it has something to do with his visions of the future. I don't care. Why did we waste our time with this? I was so excited for Kyle to get the spotlight and be back in LA. Even, you know, dealing with people like Jade and even Major Force, despite my reservations about his relationship with Jade, like, I'm exhausted by this comic book right now.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I think it does a major league disservice to Kyle, because again, depending on who's in charge and who's and what the agenda is, that this could very easily be used against Kyle to say, well, see, this is why Kyle shouldn't be the focus of a book again, or to get his own book, let alone, have a major arc, or have like let's give this book to Kyle for a year. And yeah, this is not good at all. And I just don't understand. I don't understand why anybody would think this is smart. And this is, again, this is just as much an editorial, because, you know, part of the job of editorial is saying no at times. Mm-hmm. And we've seen a lot of storylines, honestly, in this book that it very questionable in decisions and things like that.
Yeah, it's just a shame that some of the most interesting stuff Lantern related coming in the near future is not even in the Green Lantern title itself or Green Lantern Corps, because the solicits, and I'm not going to read them all outright, but Emperor Aquaman number 23, which is a Jeremy Adams title, Aquaman is trapped on Korugar. There's a yellow lantern symbol on the cover. Also, Superman number 44, Joshua Williamson, it looks like is also the new home for Zermanico, because he's listed as the artist. Superman's his search takes a deadly turn when he finds the cult worships a corrupted Black Lantern ring.
Which means what? If it's a corrupted Black Lantern ring, does that mean that it actually is a good thing?
I don't know, but I'm curious. I'm curious to see what the hell's going on. I am sure more curious than some of the other stuff. Like, there's the covers for Green Lantern 22 and 41, which all look to be like some sort of connecting cover sort of thing. It all looks very interesting. Like, there's a hooded figure with the Black Lantern symbol on the hood, and they talk about, you know, understanding everything that's been going on with Krona and all of that. Like, but you've taken so long to get here. And first of all, this is just a solicit of giving me the answers in a future title. I'm looking at the solicit for 41. We just read 38. How much more do I have to go through to get to the answers? And how is it that we haven't learned our lesson in kicking the goddamn can of the plot down the road so fucking far at this point that nobody cares by the time we get to any sort of answer?
Yeah, especially consider when we think about this. And we talked about this not that long ago. That Krona actually being revealed as Krona happened, I think, in what the actual last issue of the Starbreaker thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a long time ago now. It really is. It doesn't seem it until you start thinking about it. Yeah, because we had that whole three issues, Heroes Quest Part 2 that happened after that. And, you know, it's been a long time since that happened. And there's been, and again, I'm pretty sure this remains accurate. We haven't seen Krona since the 600th issue, which was just as a half-assed way of giving a retelling of Hal Jordan's origin and why Hal Jordan is important. So I don't know.
I'm exhausted. I'm exasperated. Let's move on to Lanterns.
Yeah, because at the moment we're not in either of those when it comes to that show. Not yet, anyway.
Yeah. You know, I actually rewatched the episode again tonight, right before we recorded, just to refresh on everything. I still remembered it all, but just to refresh, did it feel like a quick episode to you?
On what level? Because it moved. You mean because it was moving well and moved so it moved fast, or
maybe a little bit, but also just in terms of stuff that actually happens. It just like you've got the plot with him with Hal in this town. And, you know, testing the metal detectors, they become alien detectors. We know all that. And his thing with going to storm the compound and getting shot and going to the hospital, it seems like a lot happened. But it just like on screen, not a whole lot actually happened. You know, you see John wandering through the mansion and feeding Earl. Like, don't get me wrong, that stuff was cool character. But like just in terms of action, in terms of stuff happening, it just felt pretty quick one and done. Not a whole lot there for you to chew on. I don't know. Maybe it's just the curse of going after a premiere. You know, the premiere has to, by default, have more of the exciting stuff than the follow-up episode. But, like, I don't know.
But I like this episode more than the
first episode. I like it, too. I'm just saying it just felt quicker. I don't know.
Yeah, I think this episode was really good. I think this episode by itself, it was very, very good. It does, but I am concerned where we're going. And
how so? Because me too. But it just depends on which theory.
Well, I am greatly concerned because I think based on what we saw in the solicits for the next, you know, for this week's coming episode, episode 3, as we're recording this. And based on what we've already seen in trailers, I think they're going to retcon Hal's origin. And we're going to find out that the ring went to John Stewart first, but he was a baby, so he couldn't take the ring. That would explain John Stewart's statement also about the ring's always been mine. Hal's just been keeping it. Jordan's just been keeping it warm. That I think he came, because there's been a picture, I think, that leaked from this week's episode already, which shows Laura Linney, like, I think, at that Stewart household. And I think his mother might be holding him at the time. So I'm suspecting the ring is, this is what I'm afraid of, that the ring is going to go find John Stewart first, and not because he was closer. If they give us the closer aspect, like they retcon Guy's origin, which I was okay with because Hal was still technically closer, so it doesn't really impact anything. Just saying Guy was equally worthy, but Hal was still closer, so it doesn't really affect. Don't get me wrong, I never really liked that retcon, that had changed, or that addition to Guy Gardner's origin anyway. But if they did something which the ring went to John first because John was closer, I'm not happy with it. I can live with it. Knowing the way the ultimate goal of this show is to get Hal out of the way and to push John Stewart up as this, you know, ridiculously chosen one figure, which that's another thing that it seems to be happening, that John is the chosen one, that I have a feeling that's what's going to happen. I think we're going to find out the ring went to, for some, John's connection was so powerful that the ring went to him first, even though he was a baby. But of course, that was useless. But the Guardians were well aware of the fact that the ring chose this, that the ring should never be going to someone like that, certainly at that age. So they were fascinated by this. Thus, the whole idea of essentially trying to raise John Stewart to be the quote unquote perfect candidate to be a Green Lantern. So when the time came that Hal was ready, Hal was gone. Now there's other ways they could do this. He could be somehow, you know, like an ascended being, or they make him an ascended, whatever. But my fear is, and this is what I will not like if they do that and they retcon Hal's origin. So Hal wasn't really chosen first. He was just he really was the backup quarterback, but because of essentially almost like an injury, he ended up getting the job and he just ran with it.
I think what's more likely, I say more likely, it's really just my hopes and dreams. I see where you're going with that. I think if I were to take my understanding of all of that down, I think I would prefer the outcome where Hal was chosen. It was never chosen by John, but after Hal was chosen and the Guardians realized who they had as their new Lantern, were very upset about it and started looking for other options almost immediately. And discovered John.
But that wouldn't explain
as a potential ascended being.
Okay. If you're going to go with a potential ascended being, I was going to say, because that still wouldn't explain why they would go to him when he was a baby.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. I think we're probably going to find this part out. It seems we're going to find this out by episode 3, because it's certainly hinting at this is going to be the John origin story, or at least part of it. But that wasn't what my initial impression was, but I was thinking about it, and somebody else brought that up, and then I started thinking about it based on what you see in the trailer, based on the fact that obviously something's been going on with John Stewart, based on the snippets that we've gotten since he was very young. And his father was clearly trying to train him to drill fearlessness into him over and over and over again. And the idea that, oh, the job is yours. And again, that line from the trailer about, you know, the ring's always been mine. Jordan's just been keeping it warm, which again is still entitlement. And that's another thing that's going to make it harder for Jon Stewart to get knocked down a peg and be a little humble too. If he's been essentially raised since birth, and everybody's been, including via the Guardians, insisting in him that, oh, he's the chosen one. You're the one who's meant to be Green Lantern. So that's going to make it harder for Jon Stewart to be. Doesn't mean he won't be, but it's going to make it harder for them. It's going to make it harder to have him take a step back, because it makes him more like Anakin, that he's the chosen one. Everybody keeps telling him he's the chosen one. And it kind of is ridiculous not to become entitled or arrogant when everybody's telling you, you're the one who's meant to do this and do that, and you were born to do this, and no one's ever been able to do this before. And it's the same thing. I mean, I hope they go the enhanced being, which would make sense. I think there's got to be an element of that. No matter
especially
how
with the bird.
Yes. Which the bird is definitely going to mean something. You know, Jon Stewart was covering for that. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if again, to teach him fearlessness and to block out emotion, that he basically made him like kill a pet that he had or something. I think I wouldn't be surprised if we find out that's where the bird comes from, because he was way too protective of the bird to not care about the bird. And then when Hal asked a perfectly legitimate question, not even being really necessarily a jerk or being condescending about it, that's when Jon Stewart kind of like got it. And just the way Jon Stewart kind of held it in his hands, almost like he was snuffing it out before it turned into. But yeah, the ascended being aspect of it, I think they're going to go down that road. But if they do have the ring go to him first, that's going to be a problem. I was going to say, this is how they work around the fact that Guy technically, which they still need to give us a time frame for make this work, how Guy has Hal's ring, because John doesn't need a ring. He's still technically, quote unquote, a Green Lantern, but he doesn't necessarily have to wear a ring. That's how they work around that problem, too. But I just don't want it to be where the ring went to John Stewart first.
See, I think the other assumption I'm making, too, and I haven't actually shared this aloud, so I've been taking it as almost like a foregone conclusion, but it's obviously not. I'm working under the assumption that Laura Linney's Guardian character is working alone.
I agree.
She's convinced the other Guardians to, like, we're going to train a backup. But she's been influencing John and his family for years, unbeknownst to the other Guardians.
That could be. I think there's an element of that, because, like I said, I still think there's a decent shot she's Krona. I'm still thinking there's a decent shot she's Krona. Whether they really race swap Krona or this is just the appearance that he chose to, you know, when he took human form, just because it might be more appealing, or it might be more relatable, it might be more soothing with the motherly energy. Either way, there are some elements here that are up in the air about, but again, I'm hoping it's more down the road of the enhanced being thing, but again, how would they even know about John if the ring doesn't go there first when he's a baby? Because he would be a baby if you follow the timeline. If we assume John's like around 10 in 1996 when Hal's coming out, then that means he would have been born in 1986 when Hal gets the ring. So now maybe it's after. Maybe John's only like 8 or something in 1996. Maybe he's not 10. Maybe he's like 8. So then they can say, well, this was not the same night that Abensur crashed. And this is based on comic book stuff. I don't believe Abensur was the one dropping the Manhunter off. I don't think that's. Unless he was doing it, that was his assignment, and he chose he wasn't going to do it, and the Guardians made him crash on purpose to achieve their goal. I think it's more likely he became aware, because remember the fact that the character we assume is Atrocitus was talking about how a Green Lantern pretty much got the last Manhunter and said he was going to take him back and he was going to be executed, and of course he wasn't. So I wouldn't be surprised, again, knowing our history with Abensur and Atrocitus and everything in the books, that Abensur found out that this Manhunter was still alive and where he was, and he went to go was planning on finding him and taking him out.
It could be that the Green Lantern was Sinestro.
That is true too. That is true too. And then that opens another. That is true. It opens another door because maybe Sinestro freed him on purpose, even if he didn't put him on Earth. He allowed him to live on purpose.
And that would fit into my theory about like, okay, so like the Guardian is sowing in John distrust of Hal, and Sinestro is sowing in Hal distrust of John. It's a little too coincidental that those two are working to put these two on a collision course. If Sinestro was the one who took the Manhunter to Earth at the direction of Laura Linney's Guardian, you know.
And they both could work because Sinestro could have done that, but then Abensur could have caught wind of it and was trying to get him.
Yeah, and how else does Sinestro know about John? And
well, there's lots of ways they can explain that.
Well, still, but if he was working with the Guardian has been involved in John's life for decades, then, you know.
Yeah, it could be really anything. Who the hell knows? But I like the elegance of it potentially being Sinestro.
Yeah, I mean, we know. I mean, logically, Sinestro's got to be involved in something. I mean, whether the Manhunters and everything else. I mean, it could be, I don't know, it could be where, yeah, Sinestro could have been the one who he was bringing him to Earth, even on behest of the Guardians, not just doing his own thing. And maybe Abensur was trying to stop him. And then Abensur got, you know, and that's how Abensur ended up dying. And yeah, I don't know. I just don't want them to mess around with Hal's origin. And I think that's important that they don't. I mean, we know no matter what, he's going to be Green Lantern for somewhere between 30 to 40 years before they offed him, assuming he really is dead, which, of course, if it was a different creative team, you would say there's probably a decent chance he's not dead. But it's pretty clear that he's dead, I think, based on the way everybody's talking. And I don't think this is one of those bait and switches kind of thing. Oh, you think he's dead. But, we want you to think that he's dead. So that's why, again, different creators, different people involved. And if we didn't already know that John Stewart was in Superman, then maybe you could say, well, yeah, you know. Now, yeah, it would be nice if they did that, but I wouldn't expect it. It seemed the whole point was to get John Stewart as the main guy they were going to focus in on and get Hal out. So Hal's going to at least have had a nice run. We know he's going to have between 30 and 40 years as Green Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
But
see, the thing I thought that you could bring up about the concerning aspects of upcoming episodes is this theory I've seen floating around online that like maybe the whole town, not or most of the town is alien. Like it's like a little closed off settlement in the middle of nowhere and they're just trying to keep to themselves. That's why like the hospital doesn't have any people in it and nobody's, all the equipment's new, like that whole thing that they were talking about there.
I mean, which does have to mean something. Clearly it has to mean something.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think we obviously found out, in a roundabout way, we found out that Macon's benefactor has to be the Manhunter in some way, shape or form. That's what I would think.
Unless the benefactor Sinestro.
So, the reason I say that is because, and I pulled up the actual script for the show, when Antan takes John, he says, we don't know where they came from, just that they were synthetic and able to build new bodies, which meant that they could take the form of any species and embed undetected within any society. Also, by the way, I think that answers your question from last episode about if shapeshifters maintain the shape of the person they shifted into after
apparently
death.
Apparently they do, yes.
Yeah, so they do. So it still could be Hal. Again, I'm not like, you know, saying that's definitive proof out there, everybody. I'm not close-minded to the fact that they could have really just killed off Hal Jordan. But it's a check mark in the column of, well, maybe not. Antan then goes on to say, this ability to build allowed them to invent technologies far beyond the limits of the planets they inhabited. And just a few minutes earlier, he had that conversation with Macon about how the alien detectors are unlike any piece of technology Hal's seen in other planets. I think that's a good indicator that the Manhunter is something to do with the Manhunter is Macon's benefactor.
Yeah, and a lot of people think it's his wife.
Yeah.
I did like that we got a little more inkling into what makes Hal tick a little bit. I mean, I just thought that was good. His house was funny on multiple levels. It was funny. And, you know, some people were pointing out, well, Maybe Hal's an alien because all the pictures that we saw were the things that he basically referenced when he was interrogating the not everything. He didn't mention the Pope, but almost if it's not if A then B, it's more like if, you know, it's not reversible. It's like everything he mentioned was in his picture collection, but in everything in his picture collection that he mentioned. But it is funny, you know, he's got the picture with the Harry Potter cast, which explains why he knows so much about Harry Potter. That was funny. The Pope. I mean, I think there's a picture of him with Obama, and I think there was one with Bush too. It was just funny. It's just funny. But in the fact that it is typical Hal. He lives there, but he's barely there long enough. So pretty much he just has a bed, and that's about it. He doesn't really have furniture. The pocket dimension was cool.
Not just socialize.
Yeah, it's not just. Yeah, that was a key thing, but not just. That was cool.
And some people called that right. There were people online who were picking apart scenes from the trailers and stuff and calling that as a pocket dimension.
With the bird, when he was reaching in with the bird, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't have the right context, but now we know. Yeah. So that's cool. It's not as cool as being able to summon the battery whenever you need to out of a pocket dimension. But yes, it will be interesting to see. This is where it goes back and forth. John did open up a little bit to Hal when he could have kept that information to himself, but he figured he needs Hal to be able to figure this out. So at least he respects Hal's experience, if nothing else. And Hal did seem a little more open to working with John, but then we know Sinestro is going to be playing head games with him. Which, of course, as the saying goes, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. That even if Sinestro's main goal of doing this is to play on Hal's own insecurities and his fears, it doesn't mean he's not necessarily correct in the fact that John Stewart is a threat to Hal. He may not be a universal threat, you know, that he has to put down, but he is an existential threat of pushing Hal out the door and putting him out to pasture when he doesn't want to go. That part seems to be pretty true. And there's stuff with the backstory that we don't know how he got to the point in 2016 where this show began, which we assume we'll get a little bit of that when we see adult John Stewart talking to or interviewing with Laura Linney. So we'll probably get more of that. But Hal, you know, but there's reason for Hal to think that he's going to be shown the door, especially because of the fact that you're not supposed to train anybody in your own sector. That's not the way it's supposed to be. You basically, if you're training anybody, you're training a new lantern from another sector. So Sinestro's head games are not exactly. They're self-serving, but again, there is an element of truth in them because John Stewart clearly is a threat to Hal's current status quo. Now, whether he's really the biggest threat, that's probably Sinestro playing games. So you could also make a case that also is kind of flattering Hal at the same time as playing head games with him, saying that, yeah, I'm not really concerned with you being able to take out a Manhunter, but this is the one you really should look at, Hal.
Yeah, so Antan specifically said, the scale of our tragedy drew the attention of a Green Lantern sent by the Guardians. The Lantern took the monster into his custody and guaranteed he'd be executed. John says, why? He says, I do not know. It does not matter, but we believed somewhere the Manhunter was still alive. So we searched, John. We searched for years. Yeah, that Lantern sent by the Guardians could be Avenger, but also I think that also still fits in the idea of it could be Sinestro saying, yeah, we'll take care of it. We'll execute it while taking this, you know, elusive, rare thing and using it for his own ends.
Well, then, again, we need to know more about this. But then why wouldn't he use that somehow in his attempted coup with the Guardians? You would think that would have been his end game of doing that to begin with, was to see this as a potential opportunity to have the Manhunter be in his debt, so when the time came that the Manhunter would help him, and of course if the Manhunters were created by the Guardians, which of course this does not technically say that they were, but we know based on history of the Green in the DCU they should be revealed at some point that yes, the Guardians created the Manhunters and they were the first attempt at what the Green Lantern Corps became. That being the idea of being pushed out, being destroyed, and being replaced would make the Manhunters hate the Guardians too. I am sticking to my guns on this one. Just because, again, they can do whatever they want with the origin. But I suspect that if it's true that a Green Lantern went to apprehend that Manhunter and take him into custody and said, yeah, he'll be put. You're right. It could very easily be Sinestro just bullshitting. I'm going to suspect that it was Avenger. Because I think what I also don't want is I don't want them to cut into Avenger. what Abensur's history is overall. I know it, and it, I know he was a blank slate for the longest time. It's been fleshed out here or there, but we know Abensur was a good guy. So, I mean, that's one of the things that's been consistent besides the fact that, hey, Abensur is like Kyle Reese. It's like he exists just to be killed. But the reality is, no matter what, I want Abensur's role in this to be pretty clean. So I think either Abensur, I would like to think Abensur was the one who apprehended him and brought him in for justice. And then eventually he found out what he was told was going to happen to the Manhunter never happened to him. And then eventually he found what they did with him, and he went to go get him, and that's why he couldn't succeed in one way or the other. I mean, hell, we could find out that it was Sinestro who killed Abensur, or at least caused him to crash. It's a lot of things that...
I wouldn't like that retcon either to be honest. Like, I think it's okay for Sinestro to be indirectly responsible for Abin's death, but directly, I don't like.
But that wasn't always continuity either, was it? Wasn't that just another thing that was created either circa the John's era or shortly before, the idea that Abensur and Sinestro were like tied at the hip? That was never original. That was not original continuity.
I don't know.
I don't think so. Just like let's put it this way. It almost can't be, because we know original continuity, Hal was never trained by Sinestro.
Yeah, that's true. That was Emerald Dawn, right?
Yeah. I got to be honest with you. I've never been a huge fan. That's accepted lore now, and that's what it is. I've never been a huge fan of that idea. But I understand why it serves a purpose, because it's kind of like the reverse Anakin Obi-Wan relationship. But to me, again, it only works if you're never going to. And of course, they're not going to do that here. Well, not the classic way. But if you're ever going to go down the parallax road and have Hal eventually go rogue himself, you don't need to see Sinestro do it first. You don't need that. That's why you just need to know that it happened. It's kind of like just knowing that Count Dooku got turned to the dark side just made it clear that Palpatine was capable of turning a Jedi to become a Sith. So you didn't have to see the actual act of how he did it, the seduction, to know that he did it. It's just if we just know that he did it, and that's the important part. I don't know. It depends. It does depend on what they do in this continuity, because we don't necessarily know that Abensur and Sinestro were 100% tied at the hip as well in the 100% in this continuity that they're giving us here either. They just because they were involved and one maybe trained the other or whatever, it does not. It depends. So I don't know. I would like Abensur to be clean in all this. Number one. And I certainly don't. So that's why I'm going to be very curious to see what we get out of the John Stewart origin story. I'm very interested in seeing how those pieces come together.
The other thing I liked, Earl.
I was just thinking about Earl. Hal Jordan has a heart.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been surprised if they called it Itty. I think that would have been cool. I will say. I kind of liked the interaction that John had with Earl. Like he was laughing, like in a way he was a little bit obviously exasperated with Hal and the way he seems to run his life. But also I felt John was a little bit endeared towards Earl, and he wasn't surprised or disgusted or shocked or anything. Like he just like, you know, you see a hungry pet chew down on something and you're just like, oh, whatever. He didn't react badly to this alien being. He was completely unfazed by it. I think that's cool to see from John, like, you know, because he's obviously going to be encountering a bunch of aliens for, you know, obviously, hopefully the foreseeable future. So him having a non-strong reaction to any alien life form would be hopefully preferred. But I liked seeing a glimpse of him just being unfazed by interacting with aliens.
And of course, again, that opens the door for more backstory of why John became a vegan. You would kind of suspect there's got to be a reason for that too. Since his conversation with Earl pretty much makes it clear that that's not he wasn't always that way. So obviously something made him change or encouraged him to change, which is probably more like it. But the question is why, really? Well, so it's like a respect of all life of living things kind of thing. Maybe that's the aspect they're going to go down. And maybe that has to do with, again, the ascended kind of thing, potentially. I don't know. But it was a good episode. Yeah. I think it was better. I think it was better than the first. I think splitting the two of them up and sending them on different assignments in a way was a good move. It is interesting. They had John try to make a big deal over the fact that Hal booked him a flight to Coast City before he even tried to fly. When the point was, the ring was almost out of juice anyway. So it's not like he could have used the ring to fly to Coast City. It kind of became point. You would think he'd be more upset with the fact that if he actually did fly and got off the ground, he probably would have ran out of juice and died potentially. You think that would be more of a concern than being? This is where the ego thing comes into play. It's like, I don't know if I really. It is funny how they had the emergency one time trick when you're every time your ring's running out that you can just bang it against something and get a 5 second. I mean, a 5% charge. Doesn't make a lot of sense. It makes no sense, but it is kind of funny.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of it, if there's anything else. I don't think so. There are some people online talking shit about Hal saying the oath,
and yeah, I just dumb. It makes perfect sense.
Ran it.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I don't think Hal speed running the oath means anything other than the fact that he's got shit to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said the oath tens of thousands of times in all likelihood.
Yeah.
So just because the oath means something to him when someone is throwing it in his face, like in the cell and the interrogation room, does not mean that every time, you know, if you have to say, if the thing is, you have to say the oath to complete the recharge. So it doesn't really matter how long the ring is really pressed against the face of the battery. You just got to say the oath while you're doing it. Then it makes sense when you got crap to do, you do the speed reading version of saying the oath, because that's the bottom line. It's like, if your life was in jeopardy, it wouldn't be in bright as day. No, you'd be saying it as quickly as effing possible to get the charge in the ring. That's just people being nitpicky, and or the people who want to criticize the show, or people who are just anti-Hal Jordan and want to criticize Hal Jordan and try to say, well, that's another example of why Jon Stewart is better than Hal Jordan, because Jon Stewart wouldn't do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of nitpicky, this is just very nitpicky, but did it bother you at all, the design of the prison for Sinestro? Specifically, as he's walking through the halls towards Sinestro's cell, the railing being glass panels with a metal cap, like you see in lots of modern office buildings.
I've heard that criticism. I think that's probably fair, because it's just a cost-saving move, yeah. Which might make sense, because even though this may not be, even though it looks like the majority of the conversation we've seen, of the snippets we've seen before from trailers and things, it looks like they're all going to take place between Hal and Sinestro at this moment, which does not necessarily mean this is the only time Hal and Sinestro are actually having a conversation in the prison cells, whether it's flashbacks or not. But this might be the only time we're actually going to see Hal fly or walk through to get to Sinestro's cell. So I probably wouldn't have made a lot of sense to spend a lot of money building this elaborate set that literally Hal Jordan is going to be walking through for like 10 seconds. And I think it is probably true that if this was one of those things where, hey, you had an unlimited budget, just like some of the criticism is, well, The reason why we're not seeing any of the aliens and they're all friggin' under in disguised as humans is because they're like using the CW kind of budget on this. Now, I don't necessarily think that's true. I do think if we go the entire season and we don't see any of these aliens and they're all in their proper form, that is kind of half-assed, especially as one could make the point in that when John was being interrogated and arguably by Atrocitus, that behind closed doors, there's every reason why they could reveal themselves in their true form. Especially since John pretty quickly picked up on the fact they were aliens based on how they were talking. Yeah. And just like you, because you would think, especially if they're literally putting their memories, having John view their memories, whether they're accurate memories or not, something we at least have to consider. We assume it's true because we know the backstory with the Manhunters. But move beyond that for a second. If he's putting that in his head, and he's supposed to be actually witnessing or almost like being there, seeing what was going on, being an inactive participant, you would think he would see them as they were anyway. So then why wouldn't you appear to John in that way? I understand part of it. I do think it's somewhat nitpicky, but like I said, I think it's going to be a problem if you go through the entire show and you don't see any aliens really being aliens.
Yeah. We shall see, though. All right. Well, since we're on the topic of lanterns, we actually did get some feedback from one of the listeners, Shane, longtime listener, and he was writing in about episode one. So I'm just going to read off his email here, and obviously we'll talk about it. He says, "Hi, guys. Good podcast about the first episode of Lanterns. I applaud Chad for his intention to watch it all before making a final judgment. That's an approach I often agree with, but not this time. Rather than make a list of problems I had, let me sum it up the best I can. The writers have created a dreary and depressing world filled with unsympathetic and unlikable characters, including our two leads. No one seems to have a moral compass, and everyone has a dark and selfish agenda. Who do I sympathize with? Who do I root for? I can't find anyone. Hal and John should be our aspirational characters, rising above all this and showing why they're heroes. But they are as bad as everyone else for the most part. I find that I simply have no desire to spend any more time in this world with these characters. It reminds me of Battlestar Galactica, where I quit watching partway through the series because all the characters were awful people and I just didn't care about them or what happened to them. I will say that Kyle Chandler is well cast and is a talented actor, and when the writing allows it, he shows that he can portray Hal pretty well. I think he's hampered by a script that insists on Hal being old and cynical and caustic, and that's a shame. So I'm out, though I have enough curiosity about the show to keep up with it where it goes via social media. If it creates new fans, that's certainly a positive outcome. I'll enjoy your episodes about Lanterns and look forward to your reviews. Cheers, Shane."
I assume he means the second Battlestar Galactica, which I never really, I tried getting into after the fact. It's too different from the original for me, so I can't really get into that. But I think I see where he was going with that. His point is somewhat is valid in the sense of what we've seen so far is mostly a dreary and depressing world. Not entirely, though. I mean, if you go back to Hal when he was first coming out, that world did not seem as dark and dreary. Obviously, the character didn't either. Plus, we assume it's all but a given that there's going to be probably the Sinestro thing. But there's a major event that changed Hal from the Hal that was the way he was for the first 20 years of being Green Lantern to what he was during the last 10 years leading up to the events of the show. I think Kyle Chandler is pretty good at Hal. I think you could definitely see if this show was done, if Kyle Chandler was younger, or if they had this whole thing was coming about like 15 years ago and they still wanted Kyle Chandler to be Hal and not with the plan to push him out and get him out of the way, that he could have been a really good in his prime Hal. You see, he's got enough aspects of Hal that are there. Not all.
Oh, I mean, yeah. There are old photos of like headshots of Kyle Chandler in like a leather jacket or something like that. He's like in his 20s. He looks like Hal.
Yeah. And Shane is correct that he is kind of being hampered by the script. I mean, because obviously the script wants Hal to be a certain way. So I think he does his best to bring, I think he does his best to bring humanity to Hal, even when Hal's kind of being a jerk. I mean, and they're clearly trying to establish that Hal is a loner, that that he doesn't have anyone. And that's why it's so important. Why being Green Lantern is so important to him and why he has no desire to ever give it up is because that's all he really has. So we can't really see what his life could be without being Green Lantern, because that's everything he's been for like the last 30 years. Even though obviously he's disillusioned, and that's going to be part of the story we see too, I'm sure, how we got from the 2006 version of Hal, which was still pretty easygoing, to the 2016 Hal, which is just kind of coasting and bitter and has no desire to talk to the Guardians about anything. Because again, it's kind of telling that he went to go see Sinestro and didn't go see the Guardians about the Manhunters. I think it is true that that depending on one's POV, you can look at both Hal and John, and you can say that they both are unlikable in certain ways, and that they both depending on where your preference lies, you can make, I think probably both sides could make the case that's the one that's really unlikable. I guess it's somewhat level playing field, even though we know we're supposed to like John more, and we're supposed to, I think Hal's being too hard on him, but that's probably because of what the end game is. But I am with you up to this point that I'm still invested in this, and I'm going to watch it obviously to the end no matter what. But Let's see how episode three goes. I think episode three, depending on what they do with John's origin, like we talked about, could start moving me. That could start losing me. Where that so far the first episodes have not done that at all.
Yeah, I think in trying to make these two distrust each other, it would be a disservice to the audience to make us distrust either one of them as well. I would hope that that's not the case. I've been pointing out the things I like about Hal, the fact that he's a flirt, the fact that he's good with kids, the fact that he seems to revel in being a hero in his past accomplishments and just the status that it brings. I like that he spends a lot of time off world doing his thing. Like, I just feel like a lot of the problems of Hal's attitude and his tone and the way he kind of views the world and the sort of depressing dreariness that Shane describes, specifically as it would apply to Hal, a lot of it revolves around what you were saying. We need to know what happened to Hal in those 10 years. Because clearly, based on the hologram, that, you know, he was this cheery, happier dude and seemed much more sincere and vibrant and whatever. Like, obviously, that's a construct or, the ring generates it based on a save file or whatever. But you would assume that it's pretty much the demeanor of Hal back then. So something clearly happened. So it doesn't take away the fact that you feel what you feel when you watch this. Is this, that's your first interaction with this character in this series, and it's not what you want to see. You don't want to see Hal be that way. You'd rather see him be the cocky hero and, you know, showing people, you know, just really shining bright and, you know, so on and so forth. I totally get that, but that's not where they chose to place him at this moment. I would hope via flashback or via some lessons that Hal learns, if he learns to trust John and the two work together and so on and so forth, that things, you know, we will get that moment of Hal being the Hal we know and return a bit to himself, one would hope. Same with John. I think there's some people who are disparaging the character of John Stewart, you know, banging grannies and, you know, stuff like that. All the crap people say online that they want to choose to harp on. I don't know. What I don't trust about John Stewart, what I don't like about John Stewart is his ties to his father and the fact that, you know, we as viewers can look at that intro scene from the premiere and just say that is an abusive father. That is not a good person. Why would you still trust this person, you know, so far into your adulthood, given everything that went on? You know, what does that say about you? And so on and so forth. But then you see moments of him holding the costume up to himself in the mirror and the reverence with which he puts the lantern down on the counter and the how irritated he gets with Hal, the way he handles everything. And, you know, he's like, I told you not to bring the costume. And he's like, you know, it just didn't feel right to leave it there. You know, like all of that stuff. John being good with kids, him taking notes, saying, I report to you, not the Guardians, and, you know, so on and so forth. But that could be a lie, especially given we see the scene clip coming up soon of John having an active conversation with the Guardian. So like, that's obviously not a very good example, but like, there are aspects of the John and the Hal that I know and love as a Green Lantern fan that I do see in both of these characters. But I also see what you're saying and see Shane and see how that could turn you off.
I mean, I think in a way they're making it kind of a blank slate where there's missing pieces. Like even the when he's being interrogated and when John's asked has he ever been betrayed by somebody that he cared about or somebody that he loved, and he said yes. So mm-hmm. I'm going to assume that that's related to his parents one way or the other. There's going to be something related to his family. I think that's going to be the answer to that question. But again, seeing how John was raised and how with singular focus seemingly to be what they want him to be or what he could be, that clearly has an effect on John being the John that we are meeting at the beginning of the show, which doesn't mean it's going to be the John. He's still there at the end. And it's not going to necessarily at all mean that's the same John that we see in 2026. Though so far, it is kind of interesting that we've only had those brief 2 minutes or whatever of John in 2026 in three episodes.
Which I saw re-rendered or re-brightened or whatever edit of that last scene from the first premiere where we see dead Hal Jordan. I didn't catch it because I guess of the darkness of the scene, but there's a tear rolling down John's face.
Yeah, I did notice. I did notice that.
So clearly the loss of Hal Jordan bothers him. So
yeah, you would have to think that Hal and John are in a better place than at the end of the show than they were at the start of the show, no matter what. Just like, again, logically, based on what we're seeing and the fact that John is not going to have a Green Lantern ring permanently, looks like by the end of the show, because of the fact that the show ends based on the main storyline in 2016. And he also wouldn't be looking for the ring on Hal's finger if he had already gotten Hal's ring.
Yeah.
And that's even beyond the fact that, you know, Tom King said it went to Guy, which, again, there's got to be more of an explanation because timeline wise, that doesn't fit unless we find out that Hal was without his ring. Maybe Hal ends up. There's something that starts Hal on a journey where eventually he realizes he doesn't need the ring, though this sword doesn't seem to be heading you in that direction much, that he gives up the ring somehow before he dies. So Guy gets the ring in 2025, but Hal doesn't die until 2026. Yeah. But then again, you think John Stewart would know that. Because everybody knows Guy Gardner, clearly. He's not exactly low profile. But yeah, well, there's things about both of their backgrounds that they're building towards. So that's why it's going to be important that, you know, we're starting to enter into the mix now where some of this stuff is going to be fleshed out since there's only 8 episodes. Once we get past this coming Sunday's episode, we're almost halfway home. So they're going to have to start giving us some stuff. So let's see. And I think we'll learn a lot about John probably, and I think in episode 3.
And maybe see stuff about the 2026 timeline if we're going to see.
Yeah, we could.
Guy.
That is true. At some point. Yeah. At some point. Guy. It's almost pretty clear now, unless there's another time jump that isn't purely the 2026, because Guy's already a Green Lantern at this point, that when we see Guy saying about sending an army to take you down, that the way it was cut in the trailer is that it looks like he's talking to Hal.
Yeah,
but he's probably talking to John, if anybody, based on time frame, because Guy's not going to be a Green Lantern while Hal's a Green Lantern, based on what they're telling us.
All right, is that it?
Yeah, what I've seen, I saw Insidious out of the Further last week, which was by luck of the draw because there was nothing else to fit into the time frame for us going to the movies. It was okay. I wouldn't really recommend running out to see it. Wait till it's on either HBO Max or wherever. I'm not a huge fan of Insidious as a franchise. I've seen most of them. I don't think I've seen all of them because somehow this being the sixth seems to made me go, huh? What? Because I don't remember there being 5 others that I saw. I know I've seen at least 3 of the other 5. So there may have been just one that I missed. But either way, yeah. Coyote versus Acme was supposed to be tomorrow, but my plans have changed. But I still might go see it on my own. But I definitely want to see that. And yeah. And what was I going to say? Oh, obviously Endgame tickets went on sale for the Infinity Vision people, the lucky, you know, the non IMAX super advanced theaters. I'm getting sick of that crap too, especially when the rumor is that the special look, the first look at Doomsday that's going to be exclusive on Endgame is supposed to be, from what I heard, only for the Infinity Vision theaters, not for the masses, that most people, the majority of us who won't be seeing it in the theater like that. That's kind of bullshit if that's the case. I mean, I'm still going to see it, but it's bullshit that they're doing. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that shoots themselves in the foot. Stop being stupid. Because it's not like people are choosing. It's not like I'm choosing not to go to an Infinity Vision theater. There's literally nothing close to me. Or if they were, they'd be on sale. I mean, Danbury, Connecticut's the closest to me. And I'm not going to drive to Danbury, Connecticut for friggin' Endgame. And Brand New Day is creeping ever closer. Brand New Day will probably be at crossing early next week as we're... The week of release, when we release this, the beginning of September, Brand New Day should be over the $900 million mark at that point. And then it comes back down to, does it have enough in the tank to creep over the finish line and catch The Force Awakens, which I still don't think it will, but I think they'll re-release it. That's what my gut says. My gut says it'll fall a little bit short in its first theatrical release, but I think Sony will re-release it probably next year. I mean, they could decide to re-release it in December because it's like, no, I don't think there's anything big playing in the 2 weekends before Doomsday. That would not be a bad time. Throw in some extra, some deleted scenes, maybe throw in another post-credit scene or maybe not even a post-credit scene. That would do it. I would wait the next year because we know there's no Marvel movies at all until Secret Wars. So just pick a couple of weeks in the summer, like August in all likelihood when there's nothing playing. Re-release it, deleted scenes, new post-credit scene, which leads directly into Secret Wars, which by then we'll probably have full confirmation that Spider-Man is in Secret Wars. And then I'm sure the extra, whatever it's going to, because it's probably only going to fall short like about $10 or $15 million, I think. So it's going to be real close. So a simple re-release should get that. That's what I think. But that's all I got.
All right. Well, if people want to reach out to us, what do they do?
LanternCast.com. LanternCast.com. The email is LanternCast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, #GeoCast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and wherever you listen to us on any other platform, please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think. If you want our Discord information, since we do have a special Lantern Show thread that we just opened, and I still want to post a lot. I do want to do that Lantern Cast vids on those glow rings. But I think I'm definitely going to – I slack off on these recordings and they slip my mind, but this one's kind of important because I really like these rings. So I'm going to try to get that up next week too. And that's all we got.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.